From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Today, we begin an in-depth look at a shadowy side of law enforcement, confidential informants. They pose as criminals, putting their lives on the line to help investigators crack major cases. But there's a downside. Confidential informants sometimes play by their own rules and forget about the law. Some say that's what happened with the case we're about to describe.
It involves an informant who worked for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. He helped federal agents make some big arrests, but the informant also did some bad things while he was on the U.S. payroll. The question is, did the government know and simply choose to look the other way? It's the subject of a special NPR News investigation reported by Carrie Kahn.
The story begins a decade ago at the international bridge linking El Paso, Texas, with Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. A Mexican drug runner walks over unannounced and asks to speak with a U.S. agent.
It was at 2 o'clock in the morning. I went to the bridge, and I spoke to 913 for probably like an hour.
Raul Bencomo was assigned to the U.S. Customs Office in El Paso. 913 was the code number he gave to Guillermo Eduardo Ramirez Pedro, better known by his nickname Lalo. He was offering to talk about the drug cartel he worked for, and Lalo would stay inside the gang as a confidential informant, providing leads to Bencomo, his handler.
He had a lot of information, and the type of information that he started providing was at a high level.
Lalo's information was on the mark. He helped Bencomo nab a corrupt U.S. immigration agent who was taking bribes from drug gangs and also helped crack a major international cigarette smuggling ring.
He kept us so busy, we were so behind in reports that we told him to go take a vacation just to let us catch up on reports.
Lalo wasn't looking to make a deal, and he didn't need the money. He was already making plenty in Juarez's drug trade, but he had his reasons for informing on the drug gang.
In that time, I believed in the American government.
That's Lalo telling a story to a lawyer during a videotaped interview. It's precisely what he told me last fall during several phone conversations. In our talks, he insisted on speaking only Spanish. But in either language, Lalo's story is the same.
I believe in some kind of justice, yeah. I think I was doing something good.
On the videotape, Lalo doesn't fit the stereotype of a drug thug. He's clean-cut, polite, and clearly educated.
I was doing something good, something positive.
The feds paid him well, nearly $250,000 over 4 years. And Lalo was proving that he was worth it. Bencomo says his office was soon ready to set its sights on a major target, Heriberto Santillan, one of northern Mexico's top drug kingpins.
According to what we were told, he was the number three man in the Juarez cartel.
But then Lalo made a big mistake. Federal agents caught him smuggling more than 100 pounds of marijuana in New Mexico. It was stuffed in the wheels of his pickup truck. Still, ICE kept Lalo on its payroll and even worked with a federal prosecutor to get his drug charges dropped. In hindsight, Bencomo says the pot in the pickup should have been a warning sign.
That was the first incident that I ever came across that he was working both sides.
Drug smuggling turned out to be the least of it. As Lalo climbed the ranks of the drug cartel, he was becoming a trusted ally to Santillan, the Juarez drug lord. In the fall of 2003, Santillan waged an 8-month war with rival drug gangs. And during the killings, kidnapping, and torture, Lalo was there. According to documents obtained by NPR, Lalo kept his handlers informed as the bodies piled up in Juarez. In fact, Lalo secretly recorded the first murder and admitted that he held the man's legs while he was being brutally strangled, suffocated, and beaten with a shovel. Agent Bencomo remembers listening to the tape.
It just made me sick. I had to go to a restroom and throw up. I took the recording and I told my supervisor that I didn't wish to be part of this case.
But Bencomo stayed on, and so did Lalo. Bencomo says his supervisors told him to just make sure its informant didn't take part in any more killings. Today, Lalo insists he never killed anyone, but court documents obtained by NPR show he admitted being present during several murders. Those documents also show that he drove two victims to a Juarez house where he knew they'd be killed. Lalo says his actions were necessary to maintain his cover.
When you infiltrate a cartel, yeah, everybody knows you have to go like what? Like a criminal. And you have to act like a criminal.
But former DEA Special Agent Phil Jordan says in Lalo's case, every federal rule and regulation was broken.
Even if the man was John Gotti in his prime, you do not allow an informant to run the investigation. You do not allow an informant to commit felonies, to commit murder. In my mind, he was given a license to kill.
Jordan says ICE was well aware of the killings and torture, but withheld that information from Mexican authorities. Jordan was an expert witness in a civil suit filed against ICE by relatives of people killed by the Mexican drug cartel. One of the attorneys involved in that suit, Raul Loya, says the federal agents handling Lalo were a joke.
Are you kidding me? These guys are El Paso's version of the Keystone Cops. They're poorly trained. They have limited education, and that's fine. But they had no business being involved in a cross-border covert operation involving drugs and murder.
Through the years, ICE has refused to talk on the record about what happened with Lalo and Juarez. Until now, when a top ICE official finally agreed to this interview with NPR.
And I want to emphasize, our primary obligation is to protect life and limb.
Kumar Kibble was the former director of criminal investigations for ICE. He says the agency's guidelines for using confidential informants are sound. But he says in Lalo's case, the blame lies squarely with the Texas agents who were handling him and knew what Lalo was up to.
Had management been fully informed, we could have implemented strategies and taken a different tact that ultimately would have safeguarded more lives. This is not an appropriate case to comment on because the procedures that we implemented weren't followed.
Yet those familiar with the case wonder how ICE's top management could have been oblivious to Lalo's exploits. Most of the killings took place at a small house in the middle-class section of Juarez. It's been dubbed the House of Death. Today, no one comes to the metal gate at the house where cartel murderers brought their victims and buried them in the tiny backyard. We went there with veteran Juarez crime reporter Carlos Huerta. He says Lalo was the keeper of the keys.
Había las palabras claras, ¿verdad? Dice, vamos a hacer una carne asada y ¿qué se trataba? Se trataba de asesinar una persona y...
There were these code words that the bosses would say to Lalo. Vamos a hacer una carne asada. We're going to have a barbecue. That meant Lalo was to go get the house ready because someone was going to be brought there to be killed.
Some of the details are spelled out in documents obtained by NPR. Lalo himself describes how he stopped at a local hardware store on the way to the house to buy duct tape and quicklime, two essential items for binding murder victims and dissolving their remains. Eventually, U.S. officials told Mexican authorities about the murders and the bodies buried at the House of Death. Lorenza Magana, a victim's advocate in Juarez, was there the night Mexican authorities began unearthing the remains.
Y ahí duramos toda la noche.
We stayed there all night long and watched as they pulled out the remains. It was so horrible. With every new body, the smell would hit us. The smell was so bad. It was terrible. But we came back night after night to see how many they dug up.
In all, there were 12 bodies. Magana says she couldn't believe it when she found out that Lalo, the gatekeeper of the death house, was a U.S. government informant.
It hit me like cold water in the face. It just feels terrible. Here in Mexico, there is no justice, only impunity. So where are we going to find any help if we can't trust the U.S.?
But it wasn't just the people of Juarez who were outraged. So was the head of the El Paso DEA office.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
That's Sandalio Gonzalez. He got involved after two DEA operatives in Mexico were targeted by the Juarez drug gang Lalo worked for. Gonzalez says DEA wanted to question the informant, but when the agency tried, ICE circled its wagons around Lalo.
We have threats against the lives of DEA agents. We have dead bodies, and you don't want to let us talk to this guy? What's wrong with this picture?
Gonzalez lodged a complaint against ICE. He also tried to get Congress to investigate, but that went nowhere. 6 years later, ICE's Kumar Kibble insists his agency did nothing wrong.
We have thousands of informants that are active that we're managing on a daily basis that are, you know, protecting our communities, rescuing human trafficking victims. And this is an isolated instance where, in fact, the person was held accountable when they didn't follow the procedures.
ICE blames former agent Raul Bencomo, Lalo's handler. The agency says it finally terminated Bencomo because he failed to inform his supervisors that Lalo was still involved with murder and torture in Juarez. Bencomo was the only one fired. Two ICE employees were forced to take early retirement, but others received light reprimands and they're still on the job. Today, Bencomo views himself as a scapegoat. This is the first time he's ever spoken out in an interview. Bencomo insists that his bosses at ICE and their bosses in Washington knew all along what Lalo was doing.
He would report a murder, or either we heard it on a phone. Nobody told us to stop doing the case. We were told to continue. So for them to say that they didn't know about it, that's a total lie.
Whether or not the top brass knew about all of Lalo's exploits, there's no denying they used him to nab a Juarez drug lord and lock him away. And once the case was done, ICE was done with Lalo. The agency began deportation proceedings with the intention of sending Lalo back to Mexico.
Right now, I'm just fighting for my life.
Lalo has been in solitary confinement for more than 5 years, and he's in jail not for any of the crimes he allegedly committed in Mexico, but because ICE says he no longer has a legal right to be in the U.S. For now, Lalo says jail is better than the fate he faces if forced to return to Mexico.
I don't know if they're going to keep me here for the rest of my life. I don't know what's going to happen to me. Right now, I'm just trying to say, hey, don't put me in the hands of the people who are going to kill me. That's all I'm doing right now.
ICE may have learned some lessons dealing with Lalo. NPR obtained an internal agency memo written in May 2004 instructing agents not to use informants who commit crimes. The memo also indicated a new policy handbook would be issued soon. But 6 years later, it still isn't finished. Carrie Kahn, NPR News.
Tomorrow, we'll hear from the informant's attorney. She says the government is treating her client and other informants like disposable property. You can also track the evolution of the case at npr.org, where we've got an interactive timeline, including video and newly obtained documents.
You're listening to NPR News.